Welcome back to another episode of the It's a Mimic podcast. This is another mailbag episode where we are just going to pop off about things that are usually D&D related, but this one specifically Star Trek related. We've done this in the past for a number of different pop culture series or shows. We've done Game of Thrones, we've done the Mummy franchise, we've done something else that I can't remember off the top of my head. Look, we've done a few of these. Peps and I did one on Buffy and Angel. So this is Star Trek. I've gone off about Star Trek a couple of times in a couple episodes recently. And I low-key believe that Vulcans are just space elves and orcs are just space Klingons. And so here we are.
You're not wrong.
I'm kind of wrong, but I will actually defend and fight that just to
but,
make
I mean, you are wrong, but might not be about that. There's definitely something wrong. We're just not, we quite haven't quite put a finger on it yet.
So, for those of you that don't recognize the voices yet, I'm Adam. With me on this episode are Tyler and Sean. This is their first mailbag for both of them. However, of all of the people that have done episodes, we are the ones that are the most familiar with Star Trek. And so we're the ones that are going to have this conversation for everybody. We usually get these big, long lists of questions from a couple of listeners. This one is from Ryan, who I think asked us about either The Mummy or Game of Thrones. He's done this before and he just gives us 20 questions all based on one topic. And I'm going to read out his email that he sent us through our website at itsamimic.com. If there is an intellectual property you would like us to just nerd out about, send us an email. You can hit us up through the website, or you can reach us through our subreddit, r/itsamimic, through our Facebook account. Or through our Instagram. So, or you could just like subscribe and talk to us on Discord if you want to be a patron, but that's cool if you don't. Anyway, well, let me get really passive aggressive about it, but it's cool if you don't. All right. Now here's the email. Fucking freeload listeners.
Subscribe.
Also buy our merch.
Yeah. Right.
Or don't.
So here's what Ryan says. Just when you thought I'd snuck back into the night, I return. Did you think of me weak?
Yes.
Just a one-hit wonder? Well, sir, I do believe I heard another. I'd do a full episode of X statement. You threw down this gauntlet. Reap what you have sown, foolish mortal. Actually, I just love listening to people talk about something they're passionate about, and I detected that. Hopefully, that was a correct read. And now, I'm not as into Star Trek as I am Game of Thrones. There we go. We did the Game of Thrones episode. But I have approximate knowledge of many nerd things, so let's see if I BS my way through enough meaningful questions. Before we get into this, this is one of my weird little, like, because I'm all about etymology and words and the history of words and phrases and things. A little pet peeve, and I never correct anyone on, but if anybody's interested, throw down the gauntlet is not the actual phrase. It's throw down the gantlet. Nobody's literally throwing down metal gloves. A gantlet is like an obstacle course.
So you're going to throw down a literal obstacle course?
Yeah, you throw it down for the person to jump through.
Is that kind of like...
Oh, okay.
Is that kind of like carrying around, like, inside, like, a cloak of many things, you can have a canoe?
Exactly.
So you just throw down a canoe and just, like, tear off the passion, throw in, poof, canoe.
Oh, I don't know what a poof canoe is, Sean, but you go nuts.
Well,
I am all about the Star Trek series in general. But before we get into these, how much Trek do you guys know? Let's roll our dice and have a chat. I got a 7.
I got a 17.
I got a 19.
Whoa.
Sean. Big roller.
Yeah. Tickle our eardrums with your tongue and give us the words about Star Trek.
So I'm supposed to get real close in the ASMR mic, or...
I did three whole solo episodes like that, and the uncomfortable messages that I got, you want to be real careful with that level of talking deep into a microphone.
You can reach me on Discord at Mimic Adam and
onlyfans.com/ it's a mimic.
All right, okay, so nerd cred time, right?
Yeah.
So I watched... I wasn't old enough to watch TNG, or sorry, I wasn't old enough to watch the original series when it was first airing, but I was old enough to watch TNG and DS9 and Voyager, and I have a very distinct memory of waiting up to catch the opening episode, the first episode, the premiere episode of Voyager, And not necessarily for Star Trek in and of itself, but I wanted to hear the theme song so that I could talk about the theme song. And
We are all, I think every one of
thank
us,
you.
right
Yeah,
off
thank
the
you.
bat, going to say there's nothing that quite hits like a Star Trek theme, except Enterprise.
Except Enterprise.
Yeah.
Except Enterprise. Enterprise, and in fairness, well, okay, yes, I agree. So that's kind of my nerd cred. I have watched the majority of Star Trek media, with the exception of most of Prodigy and the latest season of Discovery. Outside of that, I think I'm currently caught up. That said, I haven't watched TNG since like for like 15 years. I haven't watched done a proper run of DS9 for 10. Voyager probably about the same. So I'm running on a lot of memory here and a lot of references. So, but yeah, I enjoy Star
Have
Trek.
you seen all the movies?
I have, yes.
Okay. Tyler, I think you were next.
Right. Much so the same as you, Sean. I am too young to have grown up with the original Star Trek series. However, my dad did own a lot of the books, and he would sometimes quote them, and I'd be just completely, "What are you talking about?" But I always grew up with the Next Generation. I thought it was always fun. I loved Picard as a character. It was just great to listen to and to watch. But I grew more attached to Voyager, and it was just a lot more fun for me to watch because I started to actually understand it and what was going on. I never got into Deep Space Nine only until recently because Adam kept mentioning, "Oh, people should watch it and whatnot." That I'm like, "Sure, yeah, okay, I'll watch it." Yeah. I actually have not seen a lot of the newer stuff like Picard and Discovery. And the new ones, just because I don't have the subscriptions to be able to watch them. Would I like to watch them? Sure, I'd love to watch them. But I also have four kids and limited screen time. But
That's
that
fair.
being said, I have four kids, and I have had chances to binge watch TV series while staying up in the middle of the night with them, including I recently did it with my third child, watched partway through Voyager. And now I'm going through the second half of Voyager with the next child. No more children, so I'll have to find different excuses to binge watch. But yes.
You guys, I know you both have young kids. Prodigy is fucking peak Trek. Check it out. It's hard to find streaming right now because even Paramount Plus got rid of it. But like, if you can get your hands on it, I really, really like Prodigy. It's a bit of a hard sell for the first few episodes, but it is one of the best Treks that we've gotten in a while. It feels like classic Trek.
Oh,
So,
nice.
I watched TNG with my dad growing up, and then when DS9 really kicked off and got real good, I was a teenager, so I was the right age to catch it. Between that and Voyager and the last season of The Next Generation and then the movies, all the TNG movies coming out, like it
Oh,
was a
yeah.
big deal for me when I was a teen. When I did kind of a retro rewatch of the original series and the animated series, I found my limitations for patience. I can handle select parts of the original series, but even I, who was a theater kid and who appreciates film and loves the history of cinema, even I've got my fucking limit with some of it. Like, the great ideas, but the execution is from a different time. And it's when I talk to people about, you should watch Star Trek, I usually don't start them off in the original series, the animated series, or even the first two of The Next Generation, where it was
A
awkward
little slow.
pantsuits and really young Wesley Crusher. So I have seen, though, literally every episode of Star Trek, although admittedly it's been a while for most. I'm up to date on all the new stuff, and I've seen all of the movies multiple times except the Final Frontier. That one I saw once years ago, and I've never revisited it. Not because I haven't liked it, but by the time I get partway through it, I get distracted by something else. Six movies deep is an undertaking. So
Fair enough.
I'll tell you this, I have not watched The Orville. Have you guys? Because apparently it's Star Trek adjacent.
It is very similar. I have not finished it. In fact, I'm only still in the first season of it. It's decent. It's a more gritty realism to Star Trek. So it takes the concept of it, but makes it more to the moral compass of today. And you see the actual reality of real life in this kind of scenario.
And it's for shits and giggles at first, and then it becomes a little bit more serious as it goes.
Yeah, I mean,
Both.
Seth,
It stays shits and giggles as it go.
Seth MacFarlane has to have his own, you know, quota of dick and fart jokes in there. But
exactly.
I mean, fair.
I've watched all but the most recent season, and there was a period of time before Strange New Worlds and before Discovery got good that Orville was the best Trek.
I remember reading that online a bunch. Also, we can't have a conversation with Star Trek without at least acknowledging Galaxy Quest.
Yeah, of course.
So now that we've gotten all that out of the way, I'm glad that both of you have seen Galaxy Quest. I was prepared to flip the table. Actually, Sean, did you and I see it in theaters together? It's about the right time.
I don't think so, because the first time I saw Galaxy Quest was probably about 10 years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was late to the party on that one, specifically because of Tim Allen.
Oh, not a fan? Fair enough. Wow, we're all children of the 90s,
right?
So anyway, let's grab dice, roll initiative, and start knocking these questions out.
All right.
15.
18.
7.
All right, Tyler, you're up first, then me, then Sean. And so roll a die. I will start. Do we all have the page open, or do we have to?
I have the page open.
Yeah.
All right, cool. I'm going to highlight them as we knock them off the list. So
done. First one, number 10. What lessons have you gotten from Star Trek? I think one of the biggest lessons I've learned from Star Trek is that we always strive to create technology that we see in fiction. For example, if we look at Star Trek early on, you saw that they're using what we would have the equivalent of pads, their data pads and all that. Well, we have those now. Cell phones, the communicators and all that. When this was first made in the 80s, that was never even thought of a thing that we could possibly have this. And now in 2020s, we have a fair amount of the technology that was only envisioned then. So the fact that we always strive to wonder, can we make this a reality when we watch sci-fi movies? And lo and behold, sometimes we do.
I got to say, I like in Star Trek that the means almost never justify the ends, right? Like, it's very moral about... Because, look, there's the bad admiral trope, right? Where every Star Trek admiral will eventually become a bad guy. And if they're, you know, appearing in one episode for this is their only appearance, they are the bad guy. They're going to turn out that they're behind it all in the first place. So, and it's not that they are trying to do anything that's inherently evil. They're just going about it the wrong way. And so there's a big moral standpoint in Star Trek that says it's not just important what you accomplish, it's important how you accomplish it. And I really like that. That comes with a little asterisk at the end, because Captain Sisko he breaks that rule. He crosses that line a handful of times because the greater good. And he actually has a monologue at one episode in The Pale Moonlight, which is potentially my favorite fucking episode, which is him coming to grips with the fact that he committed a war crime. He got away with it, and it's for the betterment of everybody, and he's okay with it. That's fucking dark for Star Trek. So I do love it. I do love their overall message, but I also like that it gets broken. That rule gets broken sometimes. But I think my favorite lesson, that the thing that reverberated through my head growing up, was Jean-Luc Picard said, "It is possible to commit no mistakes and still lose. That is not weakness. That is life."
Deep.
That fucking rocked me when I heard that the first time. So,
all right. The biggest lesson I learned from Star Trek: everyone's a fucking Romulan. Punch them in the face.
They're true. Sometimes they're Klingons.
Fair.
Once in a while, they're the Breen.
Yeah. I'm going to piggyback a little bit off of what Tyler was talking about with the technology thing. Perseverance is a very big thread through basically every single episode of TNG, every single episode of DS9 and Voyager. It's you know, at the end of the day, sure, you're going to put a tachyon pulse through the deflector array, but you're going to take 45 minutes to figure out that that's actually what you needed to do in the first place. So just stick to it, and you will come to an answer. And it will most likely be a tachyon pulse through the deflector array.
Or if you can't quite see what the problem is, somehow hook up Geordi's visor to it. You'll figure it out and be able to see it.
Yeah, that's a good one. Or Data was a fan of low yield torpedoes as well.
That's true.
All right, yeah, I'm on to the next question. Seven. What made you fall in love with Star Trek? What made me fall in love with Star Trek was the fact that it was something I'd sit down and watch with my dad. That's a big part of it. Like, me and my dad and my brother would sit there and we would watch Star Trek when it would come on. And it was usually reruns. Like, we weren't watching it live. When I was a kid, it was, you'd get the weird back-to-back episodes of the original series, and then the Next Generation. It was all syndication. I didn't start really paying attention to it as it was coming alive until the later seasons of Deep Space Nine, where I remember being, people are like, they fake being sick to get out of school. I remember faking being sick to get out of baseball practice or a soccer practice or something so I could stay home and watch Deep Space Nine because I needed to know what happened next. And it was a big deal for me because it was the first that I was aware of, the first serialized storytelling on television, except for reboot.
Oh, don't remind me.
So,
I love that series.
Sean, what made you fall in love with Star Trek?
The music,
Oh, fucks. It's so good.
yeah, absolutely. Again, I first started watching Voyager, and I first caught the first episodes of Voyager and the first episodes of Deep Space Nine just to hear the theme songs. Yeah, I fell in love with the theme songs. I ended up staying for Voyager because it was fun. It was fresh. It wasn't as serialized as DS9, but there was definitely an overarching story
Yeah.
that was more apparent to me than it was for TNG. TNG and DS9 specifically, I remember showing up at your place one day and saying, "Yeah, I haven't watched them in a while." And he goes, "Have you heard of Wolf 359?" What's that? So yeah,
Ooh, sit down. I've got
yeah,
opinions.
you gotta watch these. But yeah, so I suppose I ended up sticking around because the rest of my friend group is sticking around, and then yeah, got caught up in good stories. So
I got to say, the other thing that you and I both appreciate is when the good guys get fucked over pretty hard.
oh yeah,
And
that
Lacuna
happens.
Borg was the first time well, I'm sorry, Tasha Yar was the first time it happened, but Lacutus of Borg was the big one. And then that's just what DS9 does for the second half of the series.
Would you say that? Would you say Locutus was the first time that it happened and it mattered?
It mattered as much as it could in syndicated television, where you needed the bad guy to come back. It's like the Daleks in Doctor Who.
Sure.
If they're the scariest fucking thing in the world, how can we keep defeating them with the fucking screwdriver? And it's the 28th time we've done it, right? Oh, they're adapting to our phaser fire. Oh, we know how this goes.
Exterminate.
Right. And so I don't know. Lacutus was the first time that it mattered in such that it echoed through two TV series, then a movie, then another TV series, right? Like,
Yep.
we never really, as fans, I think only now have we gotten to the point where we're past Lacutus.
That we know of.
Well, I think that you can't do it without Patrick Stewart, and he's getting a little long in the tooth.
True. Fair enough. I think what made me fall in love with Star Trek was I love the imagination behind it. I love sci-fi and I love the imagination that went behind Star Trek. Just everything that was imagined in it. And there are hundreds of different alien races. There are so many different classes of starships. How everything works and everything, and the fan base behind it, that people come up with their own fan theories of how things work. The imagination that it inspires in people is pretty awesome. That's what made me fall in love with Star Trek. And I still love Star Trek because of just the fun ingenuity behind it. Even though most of it doesn't even make a lick of sense, it's still fun.
The fact that they keep changing the warp scale
Yeah.
weirds me out, but well, that's a different kind of math rant.
Okay, I'm rolling now.
Yep.
All right, here we go.
Have fun.
Number eight. Who are your favorite Star Trek characters? Okay, I've always been a fan of the oddballs. So like Data and Neelix and fucking Odo. Bashir's pretty good though. Yeah. If I were to go from my three core, those would probably be my four. Just because I mean, Data was neat because he was a gigantic computer and you didn't really know all of the things that he could do until he could do them. Neelix was just a kooky little guy making stuff on a ship. It was just kind of fun. And yeah, Odo, it always interested me that he was, a shapeshifter, and there was an entire backstory there. Yeah, those are, if I had to choose one from each, that's probably it.
Tyler?
I think if I had to choose my favorite characters, I would have to agree with you, Sean, in the sense of Data. I just loved his character and how he progressed through the series and evolved. It was a great, I'd say a great way of how the writers developed him and
Would
didn't
you
just
guys
put him off
say that
as a
he was
side
your
character.
first real interaction with AI versus humanity, which is such a trope now, but
I don't know if it was my first, but it was definitely a powerful one at that time. If I have to go with for Deep Space Nine, I love Captain Sisko, just the character of who he was. He's a different captain than what you find in all the other Star Treks. Very adventurous, but also he's willing to take risks, like pretty big risks that are out of character for a Star Trek captain. And for Voyager, I was always a fan of Seven of Nine in the
Dude,
sense of
give me two reasons why.
two reasons why. No, Seven of Nine, I felt it was a great character. Again, I'm a fan of character development. And the fact that she started off with, why are you guys doing the things you're doing? What is the point of ingesting food? Why?
Well, she's the stand-in of what is humanity. We had Spock do it, then we had Data do it, and then we had Odo do it, and then we had Seven of Nine, right?
And those are, I find that I like those because it really makes you think about humanity as a whole, from the flip side, from the opposite side of things.
Can I change my answer?
Yep.
Can I change my answer?
Yeah, what's your answer?
Garak.
Thank you.
Period.
Garak,
Yes.
yeah.
In all Star Trek media, Garak.
Garak, for those that have not watched Deep Space Nine, because he doesn't show up in any other series, which is a fucking crime. Garak, did he cameo on Lower Decks? I can't remember. I
Oh,
know
as a,
Quark did.
I think he has. He must have.
But
Martin
anyway,
Shimmerman did, but.
oh.
he is such a good spy posing as a tailor, and he is just so slimy. I love it so much. Garak is easily one of my favorites. When I think about Star Trek and I think about the different, like you think about the big three for the original series, which is, Kirk, Spock, and McCoy, and then you work your way through it and you're like, okay, it's Picard, Worf, Data. These are the big ones that stand out to me. But DS9, there's not a real stinker in the group. There's nobody that I really like cringe. Even Rom, I fucking love when I get a Rom episode.
I want
Exactly.
my
So my problem with Voyager is that with the exception of the Doctor, I didn't give a shit. I was
movie.
waiting for the Maquis storyline about these terrorists that are forced to become a part of this ship of the Federation to work together to get home as a survival method. When did that ever come up again?
Well, it came up every once in a while.
It fell off the moment they ran into Borg.
It fell off the moment that they decided that it was more important for them to put aside Maquis versus Federation. It was more important for them to put that aside and get home than it was to continue the infighting.
My problem was that in every single episode, the Maquis were wrong and the Federation was right. In every episode for the first couple of seasons, and then they just stopped telling those storylines. I just wanted Chakotay to be right, you know? Also, I had trouble connecting with a lot of the characters in it because they were one note, like Harry Kim, Kes. They did their one thing and that was it over and over again. Whereas the Doctor, Seven of Nine grew over time, but even Janeway, like you knew what her response was going to be before you got to the scene in the earlier seasons, and then it kind of built over time. But if we talk about the new stuff, Saru is such a good character on Discovery.
And an amazing actor too.
Good in literally everything. He's why I still watch the Hellboy movies, right? Good in everything.
He's also in What We Do in the Shadows, eh?
Yeah, I know.
Which just tickles me pink every time. I love it.
I gotta say, there's really not a stinker character in Lower Decks or Prodigy or Strange New Worlds. John's letting that one sink in. He's trying to find the argument.
I
I
can't
would.
argue Prodigy.
Sure.
Strange New Worlds.
At this point, we've only had a couple of seasons, but I've watched both seasons about three times now.
Yeah,
And there
there's.
are episodes I don't love, but there's not a character that I dislike. And anyone that I was a little cold on at the beginning, has now since gotten their centric episode, and I'm like, yeah. Dr. Mbenga, one of the best characters written in recent Trek.
I will say probably my favorite character in all of Strange New Worlds. Like, absolutely. I will say I don't like, what's her name? It's not the nurse. Nurse.
Chapel?
Yeah, I don't like her. I don't like her. I don't know
Really?
why. Yeah, there's something that doesn't quite vibe with me about her.
She doesn't feel like classic Trek, and the rest of the series does, right?
Is she too, is it an out of place thing?
I think so. I think that
Maybe.
she doesn't feel. Strange New Worlds is, it's such a strange show because it is a callback to previous, like it hits all the nostalgia bait that it was supposed to hit, and yet it feels fresh and modern, and they're telling stories that are either prequels or sequels to things that we've seen or heard before, and yet I'm on the edge of my seat every episode. Like, it's just made so fucking well. And I think my favorite of the new theme songs.
Yeah, I can get behind that.
Whose turn is that?
I
I
think
think.
I'm up next.
Yep.
Seven, we've already done that. Two, what did you think of the J.J. Abrams movies? What was done well and where did they fall short? I didn't mind the movies, like the J.J. Abrams movies, in the sense of if I did not know anything about Star Trek, I still would have enjoyed it. It was a fun, just action movie to watch. As a Trekkie fan watching it, I like it as a different perspective. I mean, they did the whole, oh, this is an alternate universe type of thing. So you can't really argue it against, well, this doesn't fit canon at all. Well, it's because it's a different univers. And so I think they did a decent job. It was a fun movie to watch, or all the movies were fun to watch. I did feel though they did fall a little short, as it didn't feel like your, again, Star Trek. It didn't have the same feel. It had a fun action science fiction movie that's full of lasers and everything. And there's like a lot of story that happens, sure, but it didn't necessarily feel like Star Trek to me.
I got to agree. And the fact that J.J. Abrams came out after the first one and said, I really want to get my hands on Star Wars. And you could feel like that was the action adventure, right, that we were getting in Star Trek. There was a lot of comparisons, like suddenly Scotty has got the alien sidekick that only he can understand, right? Like, there was a lot of that shit that fans have pointed out since. But it didn't bother me. It felt like it was a new take on it, and I think that the series needs to evolve. And when the Next Generation came out, fans hated it because it wasn't the Star Trek they remembered. And if you go back and compare it to the original series, that's very accurate, right? Like, so every time that we get a new round, people are raging and hating on Discovery and Picard. Yeah, but the people growing up with it are going to look back in 20 years and look at that with nostalgia and hate whatever's new.
Trekkies
That's true.
are specifically very, very, they don't want their universe to change. So when JJ came around and basically changed the entire fucking universe, I've got gripes with the J.J. Abrams movies. They were fantastic as Trek. I love the fact that it was a reboot. I really don't have very many difficulties with the casting.
Oh, that was one of their
Like the
strengths.
cast. Yeah, the cast
Paul
was
Urban
amazing.
was so good as
Yeah,
McCoy.
oh,
Absolutely.
dang, yeah.
Absolutely. And Chris Pine knocked it
Yep.
out of the park as Kirk. So that was perfect for
Great
me. Can
casting. I guess what your gripe is, Sean? Was it not enough lens flares?
Oh my God. So many goddamn lens flares. Here's the thing. Here's the thing. I'm eyeing one of the questions later on down the list, and I'm really hoping I can manufacture a role so I can hit it, so I can have this conversation. But Star Trek has always been very, very polished. The tech always looks a little bit polished, especially through TNG. They got away from that in DS9 when they, had the
Well, they were on the frontier, right? Like, that was the whole
exactly,
purpose of it, right?
and
They
it
got away
was.
with it from Voyager sometimes too, because they were so far away.
But it was a little bit more lived in those, right? Whereas J.J. Abrams said, nah, dog, watch this, and chromed everything, which only increased the number of lens flares. Ugh. And I'm done. And I'm done. And I'm done. And I wanted Benedict Cumberbatch's Khan to be a lot more than he was.
I think that there was no, we didn't earn Khan in the second
No.
movie. Like, he was
Oh,
just not earned as the big bad. You know, when you watch it, that when he reveals his name, he spits it. My name is Khan. And there's a pause for the audience to gasp.
yes.
These characters don't know who the fuck this is. They're like, why are we doing this? This is the kind of look, Star Trek, as polished as it is, it's also very clearly theater actors who are hitting their marks and saying these lines and waiting for their turn to speak again for a lot of the early Star Trek. A lot of the classic Trek is like that. And I feel like Bumblebee Cucumber was also the only one doing that in that movie. I got to say, I loved Beyond. I thought it was a great return to form, and I'm excited that the entire cast has signed on, or there's not a fourth movie happening yet, but they've all been very vocal. I'm in when it happens, because they like to work together, and you can tell they like to work together.
And that's what makes a movie, is when you have casts that actually enjoy to work with each other. It comes through in the movie.
It's the only reason, if I can be perfectly honest, besides the fact that I could turn my brain off, it's the only reason why I actually promote the Fast and the Furious movies as being fun movies. Not good movies, not good movies, but fun movies, because that cast likes each other and you can tell the charisma between them when they're talking. It's why Lethal Weapons were so much fun,
Oh,
right?
yeah.
So,
Adam, it's not a cast.
They're family.
shut the fuck up, Sean. I'm rolling a die.
Thank you, Sean.
Number seven. That's
You're
the
welcome.
third seven that we got. I guess that's Jack.
Hey, lucky.
12.
If...
Which Star Trek had the best crew and what made them the best? Oh, fuck right off.
Oh.
We just had this conversation.
The best crew, not including, like, we take the actors out. Which Star Trek had the best crew?
Who goes first?
Yeah.
Me, because I asked the
All
question.
right, yeah.
I am going to say, I really like the Stranger New Worlds crew. I don't even know half the names of the Discovery crew, which is why it kind of fell apart. I don't particularly give a shit about half of the new Picard characters. They were never a crew in the first place. So I'm going to say the best iter oh the best crew hands down by far is Deep Space Nine, because they're the
The
only ones that
Defiant.
has the most important person in the entire world, in the entire universe, and that is in canon. There's a statue in Lower Decks that is dedicated to Miles O'Brien, who is the most important person in the galaxy. So
Yeah, yes.
I gotta say, like, we I popped off about Garak and how much I love him. I fucking love Chief O'Brien. When that
Yes.
potato face motherfucker shows up in any episode, I'm there for, because you goddamn know someone is going to torture him by the end of the episode. It might be a little bit, like he can't fix the replicator no matter what he tries to do, or it might be a lot of bit where he's literally fucking tortured for an entire episode. No matter
Yes.
what, I'm there for it. I love it. So
We love hearing his accent as he goes through it too.
oh yeah. And I got to say, I think that he was one of the first actors who clearly didn't have stage, like a stage background, because that is a man that hears what the characters have to say, and he nods his head and goes, yeah, okay, I can do that. And he is not putting on airs for anybody. He is not making a point like Picard does in every episode, right? Like, he is very much just a working schlub, and I love it.
That was his character. It was
Yeah.
great.
Sean, who are the best crew?
See, the problem for me with the DS9 crew is they spent a lot of time not together. The Strange New Worlds crew is fantastic because for me, because they spend a lot of time working as a crew, right? The original series crew is classic, but I think that Strange New World, having the ability to be able to riff off that is fantastic. And they do it so well with clever nods to the past and what have you.
My problem with every crew, and this is just the nature of it, until maybe Voyager was the first one to do it, but there are, if you were to write down all the characters' names and try to make a web between them, there are clearly characters that don't have strong relationships, that they just don't give a shit. Geordi and Dr. Crusher, nah, they're not buddies. We don't see them hanging out. Uhura and Chekhov, there's nothing there, right? Like, we get that across every one of the series, except I think Strange New Worlds, Lower Decks, which such an unsung fucking hero of a show. Prodigy actually holds up. We'll pass this test. But I think Voyager, was there a weak link? Like, everybody interacted with everybody in Voyager.
Well, actually, that was actually going to be my answer.
Oh
Was
yeah.
Voyager for a strong for that very reason, is because they were forced to be together because they're trying to get home, and they all there's episodes throughout the thing throughout the entire series where you will see that they all interact with each other. I'm just trying to think, is there any one that is that did not?
Did
I can't really
Torres
think
and
of.
Seven of Nine ever have a storyline together? That's the one I'm having trouble piecing together. It's been a long time since I've watched the later seasons of Voyager, so.
Yes, I believe. There's a lot of, I think there was, because there was a lot of tension between them of their views of technology.
Yeah, okay.
And then they actually, there was quite a few where at the beginning, when she was first again coming on board, and she's like, oh, why not just do this? No, this is my bed. You don't do this. And there were, but then they grew to, they respected each other.
Okay. Yeah, it's a pretty cohesive group.
Are they like the, I'm trying to venture away from my D&D thinking of who's the most powerful group, to more so who the most tightly knitted group. And I'd say it was Voyager for tightly knitted.
Okay, all right, hold on. Sidebar, who's the most powerful crew then? Who's
Oh.
going to get the job done?
TNG crew.
Original series met God.
I mean,
They met some just like weirdly, hey, here's a big space baby that controls everything.
I would say the
TNG crew
TNG.
met Q's.
Yeah. So, okay,
But
hold
the
on.
DS9 crew punched Q in the face and then Q never came back. So I think DS9 wins. They're like, fuck it, we're gonna go bother Voyager for a few episodes.
A
few.
I think Sean, you're up. Let's roll one.
All right. Let's see what we got here. Number three. Have you seen the Orville?
Oh, I think we did that. Oops. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. If so, is there things that you that it did you think Star Trek should incorporate? Star Shrek. That's right, guys. From
Star Shrek.
DreamWorks
Disney.
Entertainment comes. Jeez Louise, man. What storylines did you enjoy? If you haven't seen it, I would recommend it. Yes, fantastic recommendation. To answer the questions in order, yes, I have seen the Orville. It is amazing. Are there things that it did well that Star Trek should
Star Shrek.
incorporate? Star Shrek,
I
yeah.
love it. I'm
Should
just picturing
incorporate.
Scotty coming out and saying, get out of my swamp now.
Here's the thing. I will say that their storyline in the first season, where they tackled a lot of very,
Heavy
very
topics.
heavy topics with dick and fart jokes, and they did it really well. Is there something I think Star Trek should incorporate from it? I think the Orville is an homage to Star Trek. I think it's its own take on it, more akin to Lower Decks. I
Is it
think that the.
irreverent? Like, that's my favorite thing about Lower Decks. I haven't seen the Orville, but like, Lower Decks mocks Star Trek, but loves it. It is an inside joke with the creators and the fans. Does Orville mock it in an irreverent manner, or is it, does it still respect the core concepts?
It still respects the core concepts. It hits on a lot of the same notes that Star Trek has science fiction, not Star
Yeah.
Trek has fantasy, but Star Trek has science fiction
Okay.
does well.
I think it really takes the idea of traveling in a starship type of thing, like this idea of what Star Trek is and exploring and all that. But it is an homage to it, but it isn't Star Trek. I don't want people to think that, oh, they're clearly copying Star Trek. Okay, yes, they're making an homage of it, but it becomes its own thing. It's its own genre of this sci-fi. It uses the same vehicle as Star Trek in a sense of going out and exploring in a starship.
Like I gotta say, we're getting to the point now where some series, some especially science fiction series, are getting so big that they become almost a genre to themselves. You can watch a Star Wars movie, and if you don't know that it's Star Wars and there's no lightsabers or anything in it, you will still pick up on the fact that it's Star Wars based on tone and flavor and characterization and writing. Star Trek is like that as well. So, like, does the Orville, like, is it a Trek? Like, it's not necessarily a clone, but is it a, like, it falls into the genre of Star Trek?
Oh, I don't know if it necessarily falls into the genre of story. I would say, that's a good question. I would say that overall starship exploration that Star Trek really started, if it does it fall into that genre? Yes.
Okay.
Does it fall into a genre of the storylines that Star Trek kind of coined out and did? Not necessarily, but I would say the general idea of space exploration, yes.
John, we cut you off. What storylines did you enjoy?
I'm not going to do it anywhere near justice, so I'm not even going to explain it, but the first season they have an entire conversation about, frankly, abortion.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh,
Yeah.
yeah.
And it becomes a recurring plot thread through the series.
That's
And
ballsy.
it,
It
like,
really is.
great big fucking brass ones. And I agree that the Orville isn't Star Trek. But sometimes it does things more Star Trek than Star Trek could do. Because Star Trek, I find, is at its best when it's doing the sci-fi thing of shedding a light on today's issues in a forward-looking way. Like they did with the half white, half black face in TOS.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of the episodes.
There are that's a marker of good science fiction, in my opinion, is when they use the science fiction tropes or the technology or whatever it is to hold up a mirror to current society and to ask the hard questions to make us think about it in new ways.
Yeah, I think Orville does that really well.
I think Star Trek does that really well most of the time. They're tone deaf on some episodes, but times have changed. We're decades into this series, right? Doctor Who makes us do that. Like, clearly, like Twilight Zone, Black Mirror, Outer Limits, they do shit like that, right? Like, these are indicators of good science fiction. I'm glad that the Orville is doing that. That makes me more interested, definitely.
And there are a couple of other storylines in there that I really dig about on the Orville. The entire without maybe it, am I allowed to get into spoilers?
I mean, just give a warning.
Okay, well, here's a pretty big warning then. I'm going to give everybody 5 seconds, and it's only going to take me about 30 seconds to get through it. So,
Sure.
one, two, three, four, five.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, right? Look at me being a good person. There's an entire storyline where one of the core crew members ends up turning on the entire crew again, and then they fight a war, and the character that turns back to the other side. Now, what happens with the rest of the crew? How do they react to him? How do the relationships that that character have throughout the preceding seasons? Yeah, how do they react now? And
That
it's
I love that. I love that they did that. Now, like, I'm very curious. This was kind of like, yeah, if I get to it, I'll get to it, but it's on my list now because I loved, like, that was one of the big hooks at the beginning of Discovery that I fucking loved.
Yeah,
Right? That's
absolutely.
true. Tyler, have you've seen the Orville? Is there anything that you think Star Trek should incorporate or storylines you enjoy?
Well, one thing I do like that Orville does, and we've already touched on it, is just touching on real world issues
Yeah.
and tap, but they tackle it in a different way that Star Trek does. And now, do I think Star Trek should tackle it in the same way? No, because Orville brings the comedy to it, and Star Trek isn't a comedy.
It can be. Lower Decks makes it comedy.
Okay, true. Yes, you're right. But I think one thing that if they could do anything is to be a bit, take a bit more of the realism of people, of the moral issues that people deal with, and to be blatant about it. Because sometimes I find Star Trek can be a little vague at times.
It does like to go broad strokes and hit kind of the generalities of the morals of the situation,
Yeah,
right?
whereas I
And
find Orville does not. It hits it pretty hard on the mark. If any storylines I did enjoy. Now, mind you, I am not far into Orville yet. Again, I'm only on the first season, but one thing I thought was absolutely hilarious, and you could almost see that coming, but it's still good. The whole idea that the captain of the ship, who's been waiting for this forever, and then finds out that his number one is his ex-wife. And
Fucker.
when I you could almost see it coming, but at the same time, when you heard it, it's just like, oh, yes, that was so good. Thank you. And I
Yeah.
just love that. I love how it just progresses. And he always will make reference to it as they're talking. Now, it's not as bad as having an ex-wife that serves with you, but
Super passive aggressive, hey?
Oh, it's
oh,
glorious.
very.
All right, Tyler, I think you're up. Let's roll another one.
18. What? Okay. Alien race you'd most like to bone in Star Trek. Now, okay, so if I'm thinking of Voyager here, and there was an episode where B'Elanna goes full for some reason. I'm trying to remember why, but she turns full Klingon because she's only half Klingon. She some reason she turns full Klingon, and it's during mating season. And she says to Paris, like, it is a long, vigorous session that we can have.
They get into it
Yes.
on DS9 too. later. Like they get into like the Klingon mating rituals and shit. It's so good.
I'm not gonna lie. I'm just like, oh, that just, I just, yeah, that I would say that to me is just like, that just sounds like a time.
It can I say, speaking of Voyager, species 8472 is that it? So there's no right answer to this. As long as they've
No.
got green paint on their skin, like the, then that's all.
Orion.
Yeah. That was the whole Kirk thing, right? Is as long as they're a green alien. I don't know. I will say this. I remember the majority of my friends growing up had a massive crush on Deanna Troi.
I was gonna say Ezri Dax. I remember our friends distinctly having a problem with Ezri Dax.
Anyway, it was a problem, yes.
It was a problem. I remember one friend in specific whose house I ended up sleeping at for an extended period of time having difficulties.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. Anyways.
Let's move on from this awkward question.
Yeah, that's
Thank you.
Thanks, Ryan.
Adam, save us.
Five. Are the Borg a cool idea that never really panned out? I've heard they got nerfed by the writers a lot so they could be beaten. So they never were the threat they could or should have been. What are your thoughts? All right, everybody sit down. It's time for an essay.
Oh, can be a
Well,
collaborative
okay.
essay.
I've got a lot of thoughts about this. I'm going to boil it down to the base brass tacks here. You cannot introduce an all-powerful enemy that can be beaten. You just can't. The Borg are absolutely terrifying. The moment they started to give them names, like Hugh showed up as a rehabilitated Borg, Seven of Nine, the moment we could start to undo it, they weren't scary anymore. We needed to really have an existential threat with them to be scary, and they were one of the first encounters that were like that.
Was the problem that it could be undone, or was the problem then that the collective could be broken?
Well, yeah,
Both.
that's just it. Is when they first showed up, their ship was absolutely massive compared to everything else, right? With their big cube, they were nigh unstoppable on a singular basis. Any one of them was nigh unstoppable by no matter how many people, right? You had to resort to hand-to-hand combat if you ever faced off against them. They wiped out entire fleets of ships, they assimilated entire species all at once, and then suddenly we were running into this one over here who's learning how to be human again. And this one over here, we showed up on their terrifying ship, rescued the captain, and made him better. We just made it better, right? And the Borg was a cool idea. Originally, it was as a cosmic threat, and it became a cosmic threat again. First contact, cosmic threat, very cool. That season of Picard, that was all about the Borg going back in time. Existential threat. The Borg part of that, we got to see the Queen again. Cool. I liked them better without a Queen, though. Like, I liked them better when they were just a hive mind, and God knows how they started. And I originally thought, my own personal headcanon, was that you remember the in the motion picture, they spent the whole time dealing with V'ger, which turned out to be the Voyager probe, which had gained sentience and was going around to assimilate other cultures. I thought that was the origin story of the Borg. That would have been so fucking cool. It
That
wasn't.
would have been
But that would have been really cool to have that storyline pan out in that way. That being said, every time that we get a personal Borg that's the Queen or Seven of Nine or Hugh or Locutus or anything, I like that story. I like how Data has to interact with the Borg because he's an artificial life form as well. But yeah, there are definitely some storylines that are scarier than others. And I prefer my Borg scary.
I would have to agree. The Borg, I don't want to answer another question here that we have coming up, but I really like the Borg because, at least in the series that I grew up watching, they were always a big threat and were always there. And it was scary as heck because, yeah, these are like a cosmic horror villain. They can't be beat. And even after I liked the idea that one or two got away and were reformed. I didn't mind that because it wasn't as if they were fully reformed. They had questions. They did not know. But just the idea of who they were is such a scary thought. I don't, but I haven't watched the newer series, so I can't say with accurate if they actually got nerfed. Did they get nerfed in the newer series?
I think the nerfing happened in the Next Generation, where like we saw them be so scary for two episodes, and then it was just like you were guaranteed every season to have an episode with lore, an episode with Borg, an episode with fucking Alexander, right? Like there was always an episode that you were going to run into in every season with all of these characters. And so as it kept going, the Borg just became Everyone's still scared of them, but we got around them last time. We'll do it again. Like the threat disappeared. They did this in Buffy when in the final season when it was the first evil of all time. They did this every other season of Supernatural. It can't be bigger stakes every single time, right? You cannot maintain the scary for that long. Part of the scary is the known factor. Now we know it. It's not scary. Look at the Alien franchise.
Yeah, oh yeah. No, I think it could have they could have evolved it more in the sense of find a new way to make them scary, not more personalized. Keep them as a collective. But I really like the thought. I love the idea if they had kept it going. And like I think a great villain that to that scale would be something like if we were to think of the Reavers
From Firefly, yeah.
from Firefly. Like it's that similar thing that they just assimilate things into them.
That's
And
taking it to D&D for a second. That's why I appreciate gnolls, because when they kill, they consume. But the hyenas that eat their kills will then blow up and become more gnolls. So like, if you have a hyena problem, you got a gnoll problem, and it's existential. They can't be stopped, right?
I feel as if the Borg were wasted on TNG.
Interesting take, because Locutus is so classic, so
Locutus
iconic.
is classic and iconic, but I feel as if, listen, TNG, sure, we had those tentpole episodes from season to season. We had those two-parter episodes and those, hints that the Borg were there all the way throughout, right?
Total
However,
sidebar, but by the way, sidebar, just for context for people, the episode Best of Both Worlds, the first one where Picard gets taken, and we end on that, the first negative cliffhanger to end a television season in primetime history.
yeah, we didn't know how to handle that at the time. And I think they didn't necessarily, they kind of dropped the ball a little bit because they had an existential threat, right? And then they made that existential threat such a problem to the series by effectively taking the man that would become an admiral, right? By taking Jean-Luc, they had to solve that problem. So they immediately had to turn around and neuter the Borg. And I don't think you ever really fully recovered from that, with the exception of Generations, with the exception, well, not Generations, First
First
Contact,
contact.
sorry, with the exception of a couple of things. Now, they did a little bit in Voyager make them scary again.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
In that the crew of Voyager needed the Borg tech to be able to get home. But then they turned around and immediately made something that was scarier than the Borg in Species
Species 8472.
8472, right? So
Well, it's interesting because the Borg was like the prototype. They were the beta test for this whole thing, because the changelings in the Dominion, every season of Discovery, like we're always everything we do now, every season of Picard, it's an existential threat to the Alpha Quadrant,
Absolutely.
right? And Locutus and Borg did it first, but they did it so quickly. It was iconic, but then it was over in a flash.
Which isn't to say that they did it poorly, but they shot themselves in the foot in the process. They set
They made it
they
too big
set the
too.
bar too high. Exactly. It was too big too fast. And I feel as if the Borg would have been better served by being, which is difficult to do at warp scale, right? But by being that threat off in the corner of the quadrant that is slowly advancing, and they don't know how to deal with it other than to just amputate the limb and move, get away from it, right?
That is too dark and too serialized for the 90s, right? And
Exactly.
that,
Yeah,
that
that's
that's
just
the
it.
problem. It suffered from the era it was in.
Yeah.
I think that the original series crew hit all sorts of threats that could wipe out humanity all the time, and they fixed it by the end of the episode, and they moved the fuck on, right? Like, so
But they were always episodes in a bottle, right?
yes. Yeah.
Whereas, Best of Both Worlds, and was the episode's name I, Locutus, the following episode?
No, there was an episode called I Borg, but
Okay.
it was a later episode.
And maybe the second episode was Locutus.
I think that was just Best of Both Worlds Part Two.
May have been. It doesn't matter really necessarily. I've even forgotten the point of that. Never mind, carry on.
The carry on
Excellent.
is you rolling another die, sir.
Oh, well, fine.
Be that way.
Number four, who are your favorite Star Trek villains? Who challenged the protagonist the most or were the greatest threat?
Let's talk about the Borg. All right.
Well, okay, Borg notwithstanding, because legitimately the Borg could have been bigger than they were. They could have been. So okay, were the Founders villains?
Yes, the genocides alone.
Right? So I think those are pretty big one. That's a pretty big one. Their biggest villains, my favorite villains were always the ones that were themselves, like future Janeway showing up on Voyager for that episode.
Did you like the Mirror Universe?
I liked the Mirror Universe because it was always poking fun at the other universe, right?
And also, there's enough black leather to keep you interested.
Oh, just about. Just about. Just about. Yeah. Who challenged the protagonist the most, or were the greatest threat? I mean, the Borg have always been a threat and a challenge, and they've been carried around as a threat for so long. Why? That's an interesting question. Why are the Borg the villains that they have carried along with Star Trek so long?
Because the Borg are the most alien aliens that we have. All of the other aliens that were alien, how many times am I going to say it in this fucking comment? But the ones that felt truly different in the original series were humanized. They were Romulans, they were Klingons by the time that the Next Generation came around. The
Right.
Klingons were the Russians during the Cold War, right? Like that was it. When the Borg showed up, the enemy was no longer a foreign state metaphor. It was the technology, the future. It was a bigger, better question. And I
Okay.
think that's why lore is as popular as he was. Bigger, better question.
I want to come back to this idea later, but I'll pass on the torch. Tyler, I think you're up next to answer.
I think I'm venturing out a little bit because my favorite villains are the Borg and what they could have been, and because what the kind of villain they were in Voyager. But that aside, putting that aside, I'm gonna venture out a little bit. And do you guys remember the original Star Trek Next Generation movie? The
Yeah,
main
V'ger,
the
right? Oh
well,
no, the original TNG movie.
yeah.
Shit, what was his name? Soren.
Thorin,
Yeah,
I
Malcolm
actually
McDonald.
really liked him for a villain because it gave a real challenge. It is one of those villains that it makes sense and you feel for what he's saying, that he wants to change the time stream to make it better for his fam for who he was. Like things could be better if I just change this. It really gave a sense of it could be better, and you didn't see a lot of that at that time when that was made. And so I think that's a really memorable villain for me when if I were to think back.
Specifically, the villain being somebody you could almost sympathize with, the villain
Yeah.
having a reason that you could.
You could be empathetic about it. And that's the thing, is I think that's the biggest challenge to any Star Trek villain, is if you can empathize with them, that's powerful.
I have got all sorts of answers for why they're the best or the worst. I can make a strong case for why Nero was a really cool villain and better than the other shit that we got in most of the movies. I can make a really strong case for Harry Mudd being fucking amazing as a villain. So much fun. Again, one of the better, yeah, I just have good things to say. We could talk about the Duras sisters, right, who showed up across a couple of series and in one of the movies. The Borg Queen, of course. Do we count Q? Is Q a villain?
He's neutral.
I mean, he's definitely an antagonist.
He's an antagonist, but I wouldn't call him a villain. Even in Picard season two, there was redemption at the end for him.
I mean, if he's a villain, so is Snidely Whiplash.
I gotta say, like, General Chang from the Undiscovered Country stood out to me. It's fun to have the eye patch. There are lots of good answers. I've got to say, Khan is classic. It's not a
Oh,
bad
yeah.
answer ever, but it's my trifecta. My favorite of all villains were the way that Dukat, Weyoun, and Kai Wynn all interacted. You can't go
Okay,
wrong
yeah.
with the DS9 unholy trinity. And Weyoun, can we just give a shout out to Jeffrey Combs as being the best
Yes.
actor in literally every goddamn thing he does? In,
Yeah.
and in, including Enterprise, which we have not talked about at all at this point
Yeah.
because we're like it's the bastard child of Star Trek that we don't talk about.
Actually, I didn't mind Enterprise.
It was forgettable. That was the problem.
Yeah.
Also, the last episode was such a wet fart that,
Yeah, that's true.
right? So, but no, I Wayoon is just, and can I also vote for Brunt? Right? Can we talk about the Ferengi for a minute?
Root beer.
That would Liquidator Brunt, FCC at your service.
was so good.
Anyways, yeah, I got it. Like DS9 had the best villains, but like Seska, good villain, right? Eddington, good villain. They just didn't last long enough. There are just better ones out there. Who's rolling next?
Well, that was my role, so I believe
That's
you.
Tyler.
Yeah. Tyler, you're up.
Oh, one. Natural one. Ooh, top three favorite Star Trek series and why? Okay, I'm gonna go from top down. My favorite overall is Voyager. I know, no, some people are gonna be like, "What the heck is wrong with you?" I'm sorry, but I really like the Voyager just because it wasn't Star Trek in the sense of, oh, okay, we can go to Earth and go back. No, it was, I like the idea that they were blown so far away, and then the whole series is about getting home. It's not about exploration anymore. They can explore along the way, but the primary objective is to get home. I just loved the shift that Voyager was and that it brought. So that's my favorite. Second favorite, I would say TNG, but I've been getting into Deep Space Nine. Thanks, Adam. And so it's been a lot of fun to listen to it and to watch it, especially with my wife and I. We both are watching it, and it's a fun story. And you the first I get the first season and a half, it's a little it's okay, but then it just gets better and better and better. So I've been thoroughly enjoying it. And then third favorite is TNG. Just iconic, and the storylines that come from it.
I've got some damn thoughts. I'm going to go with the list real quick because I do have thought. I don't have a favorite episode of Enterprise. They mostly blended together. They went back in time a couple times and I enjoyed those. So, Discovery doesn't have a clear winner for me. Picard doesn't have a clear winner. They're both just so serialized, you can't do one episode, right? It's hard to pull them out. I will tell you that I really liked the episode where they were all losing their memory of Strange New Worlds. And that was like, Ortega, I fly the ship over and over and
Oh
over again.
God,
That was a
yes.
fun episode, right? They did a musical in this latest season.
Oh,
That
that's always good.
was a lot of fun, right? It was really good to see them doing that as well. But I think there are four episodes that stand out in my head as being five peak Trek for me. And I'm gonna end up giving spoilers to for Tyler's not done DS9 yet.
How dare you, sir?
Worf's wedding, fucking beautiful. Not a complaint about it at all. The episode In the Pale Moonlight, as well as the two-parter where we find out that one of the main characters has been replaced by a changeling on the station for the last two episodes, and we end up seeing the concentration camp. Those are all badass as well. I have no problem whatsoever, and I will never skip Trouble with Tribbles or the sequel, Trial and Tribulations.
That was just brilliant writing.
There's so many unskippable TNG episodes. My favorite one that stands out is either All Good Things, because I loved the finale, the big two-part finale. It wrapped up a series so nicely. But I loved Darmok, which was Shaka When the Walls Fell, right? Such a cool, interesting idea for an episode. The only episode that I can think off the top of my head, like this was an episode that I distinctly remember, was anything Captain Proton in Voyager or Threshold. And if you don't remember what Threshold one was, that was one where they went so fast, they de-evolved into salamanders and fucked.
I do remember that.
And I don't
Oh.
remember that for the good reasons.
I'm going to subvert everything you just said. The
Okay.
question very specifically says series and not episodes.
That's what I was going by too. I'm like, oh, dang.
No, I know, but this is where I go. Like, clearly, when I'm
Okay.
thinking about the episodes, I don't give a shit about Voyager. Like, there are too
Sure.
many stinkers for it to
Yeah.
be the best series. So when it comes to the best Star Trek series, Deep Space Nine will reign supreme. I'm gonna have to say, I don't know, does TNG make the cut? Maybe number three. Strange New Worlds is rapidly becoming my favorite of everything except DS9. They really haven't missed a mark yet. Last one is TNG or Lower Decks, right?
And mine pretty much echoes yours. It's
It depends if I'm in the mood to laugh or think, right?
Strange New Worlds really did do a lot of really cool stuff, and I absolutely love what they've been doing. Yeah, Strange New Worlds, Lower Decks, and DS9. Not necessarily in that order, but those are the top three for me.
They're the ones that I would recommend to people to get into Star Trek, right? And that's why I have trouble. TNG has so many good episodes, but it's hard to recommend in 2024
Yeah,
because
that's yeah.
there's a lot of Wesley
Outdated.
Crusher shit. There's a lot of Beverly Crusher reading her grandmother's diary and then having alien ghost sex dreams, whatever the fuck that was. Like there's a lot of Data, are you fully functional? And then he goes off and bangs a human woman for some reason.
Had to test it.
Anyway, moving along.
Moving right along.
I'm rolling. We rolled a two. I'm rolling. I rolled a two. I'm rolling. 18. Just I rolled a two. 11. Most overrated Star Trek things.
I've got answers. I've got answers.
I've got one that's controversial. The reputation. Star Trek
Okay.
does not have a great reputation. Same with the Dungeons and Dragons and Doctor Who. When you are like, yeah, I'm a bit of a nerd. I like this. You can say, I like Marvel movies. I like Star Wars. Everyone's going to shrug and be like, yeah, sure. You can be a little off kilter and be like, I'm a big horror movie nerd, or I love Godzilla movies, or I'm big on Starship Troopers, or because I read the book, or The Expanse. People will respect that. But when you say Star Trek, the average person goes, okay, and because they don't want to deal with the stereotypical basement dweller covered in acne, still lives at home and eats pizza pockets and Mountain Dew all day, right? Like that's the stereotype about Star Trek fans, the stereotype that comes with the we are going to get in an argument for the next 12 hours about who is the better captain, Kirk or Picard. That exists. And it exists for a reason. The fans kind of earned it, but we've also grown out of it now. The series that I see that for more than anything else are going to be, to the average person, Dungeons and Dragons, Star Trek, Doctor Who, and Lord of the Rings. Those are the ones where I've seen average dude who's 12 years older than me, his eyes glaze over and he's no longer listening. He has lost respect for me as a person because I am too nerdy. That's what I think is overrated, is that fucking reputation. We don't deserve that now.
I still get those looks when I mention Stargate.
I don't know what it is. I can't watch Stargate. I loved the movie and I was all over, which one was it? Universe, the one that just got absolutely killed.
Stargate Universe was so much fun, and I still return to it in my head like once a month.
Sorry.
Yeah, but I couldn't get into the other series,
Fair enough.
and it was just, I don't know. Okay, I spent an entire week working on the set of a Stargate. It wasn't SG-1. What was the sequel?
Atlantis?
Atlantis.
Oh,
Spent a
I'm
week working
jealous.
on that set. And I was there to just be a gopher. Like I wasn't doing anything particularly important there. But I saw behind the scenes, I saw the cardboard cutouts, and I'm like, I don't think I can respect this show anymore. It broke the magic for me.
Fair enough, fair enough.
Anyway, what's the most overrated Star Trek things?
I think the weapons, to be quite honest, there's so many weapons like photon torpedoes. Set your lasers to stun.
Phasers—they're distinctly phasers, and you goddamn know it.
See, there you go.
Maybe I'm the nerd problem.
But that's what I mean is there's I find that it's just so it is quite overrated that as soon as someone makes a mistake or something like that, no, it's this. It's like, can't that just be like just ready the weapons, be more creative. What are some more weapons we can use? Don't just add on to what's already there. But I think those are pretty, in my opinion, just because I love the story that it builds, but then as soon as it's in the combat, prepare photon torpedoes.
I think the problem is they keep solving tactical war issues with engineering, and it is such a
Yeah.
trope. The infallible engineer.
Yeah, I just yeah.
I kind of have to agree with Tyler on that one a little bit. I mentioned it earlier, all problems are solved with a tachyon pulse through the deflector array. And every once in a while, the technobabble gets a little bit shticky. I enjoy a lot of the combat in Star Trek, but I enjoy it when it's actual, like they're doing maneuvers.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, when there's actually tactical analysis.
As opposed to them just sitting there and one pointed at each other.
As much as I like the maneuvers, though, I do appreciate the fact that it's capital ships fighting each other and not fighters. When I see spaceship fighters, I think Star Wars. When I see
Yeah.
two or three massive ships just pounding on each other, I think of Star Trek. Not like that, Sean, you pervert.
Giggity. And the other most overrated Star Trek things are the Borg.
Fair.
Like
Fair.
they could have been so much more. They could have.
Can I have another answer?
Yeah. About what?
About the most overrated Star Trek thing?
Yeah.
The nostalgia.
Is it?
Yeah, because every single time we get a new series, everyone rants and bitches about how it isn't like the old series.
I think that's a particular problem with Trekkies, though.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
Yeah.
but also the people making the movies. There's after Voyager, it's callback after callback after callback. It wasn't enough for Michael Burnham to be her own character. She had to be Spock's adopted sister. Stop doing that.
That's
Let
fair.
the characters do their own thing. Strange New Worlds aside, because it's supposed to. Lower Decks, the fact that Lower Decks is an homage to everything, Strange New Worlds is an homage to everything, Picard is a sequel to everything. I want new stories, new characters. That's why I liked Rogue One, because it wasn't a Skywalker story.
Yes.
Fair.
To that point, though, I think Lower Decks does skirt that line quite well.
It's forgivable with them. It's one of the
Yeah.
reasons I like Prodigy, though, a lot is, yeah, they've got a hologram of Janeway that helps to lead them, but it's not when I was on Voyager in every episode, right? It's just they got Kate Mulgrew to come back and be a voice actor.
Yeah, I gotta check out Prodigy.
Now I gotta check it out too.
All right, roll it.
Yep.
All right, Leafin, we've already done. Five, we've already done. Son of a
Goodbye,
14.
dice. Hey, that worked.
Hey, there we go. I'll take the floor dice. Okay, if you could make a Star Trek series, what would be you make it about? If you could make a Star Trek series, what would you make it be about?
There it is.
Villains, crew and captain makeup? What is the ship and what are they doing? What themes or plot would you like to have?
Okay, let's do story building now.
I want an entire 3-season arc of the DS9 crew on the motherfucking Defiant. Yes, please. Just them stuck behind en enemy lines. That would be cool. I would dig that.
Tyler, what do you got? I have no arguments with that. That is that I would tune the fuck in. I would have.
I know.
I would have.
I was trying to
No,
think of it
not just
in.
A. I would have the boner for that.
I was trying to think of something. Then you started going on like, "Oh, I'm just hanging on your word." Now, t oh, tell me more. Tell me.
Pour that sweet honey into my ears. Come on, Sean.
Yeah,
weave, sir.
if DS9 wasn't such a closed book, I think that would be a fantastic story to tell.
And if you could get the actors back, because Avery Brooks is very much on record as saying never again.
And the actor who played Odo is dead.
And the actor that played Nog.
Oh,
Oh,
I
really?
don't think I knew that.
Yeah. That one particularly hurts. He was young.
But anyways, I always liked the design of the Defiant. I always enjoyed the entire Jem'Hadar War was really, really well done. And I think that would have been a really cool story to tell.
I now I just really like that idea. Thanks, Sean.
You're
No.
welcome.
I would almost want to explore if Star Trek had a ship that, much like Voyager, got thrown across space. What if it was a ship that got thrown into an alternate dimension and that ne was trying to get back home that way? But yeah, I just like the idea of finding a way home. Maybe that's just me in my Voyager sense, but I like the idea of if they were thrown to an ulterior dimension. And I don't know if I'd make this a whole series, but more so maybe even just a single episode or a few episodes worth. But how does the crew get back home or back to their original dimension? Because
We
we do see that often enough.
if you want to deal with that, watch the first season of Discovery, because they deal with the mirror universe in a big fucking way late in that season.
Oh, okay, good to know. Now I need to get Paramount Plus. Thanks.
I've got a couple of answers. The one that I always wanted until we started to get new Trek, was I wanted Riker on the Titan with some of the Voyager and DS9 crews.
That would
I
have been
wanted
cool.
an amalgamation of all of the just having another 5-year mission, right? But the Titan is such a powerhouse warship as well that like they could mix it up with some enemies, right? You do it right after the DS9 storyline. Voyager comes home, everybody goes through debriefing, they get a little breathing room, they come together to go deal with the Cardassian rebels that are still holding out, the Dominion that the Jem'Hadar that are on They don't have enough Ketracel White, so they're going to absolute fucking town on, border planets. The Romulans see a power vacuum, so they're going for it. Like, show me that shit. Give me all of that, right? The other thing that I think is ripe for the picking is, and bear with me, it's not Star Trek, but it is in the same universe. In 2024, in Star Trek, they had the Bell Riots, where the hell was his name? Began with a G. Doesn't matter. There was a man whose last name was Bell, who stood up and had a whole bunch of riots in LA about essentially the slums and the degradation of America. And then from 2026 to 2053, they have World War III. Show me that. A majority of humanity did not survive. It would be badass to do a whole like 3-season storyline to reveal at the end that that this is actually Star Trek. You don't tell them the whole time. You just tell this story, right? Because we don't know much about that. So I would be very interested in something like that. Or just give me something on Earth that isn't Federation based.
So how would
Yeah.
you, how would knowing Zefram Cochrane is a thing,
Yeah.
eventually,
Yeah.
how do you reveal at the end of this supposed 3-season arc that this is Star Trek?
Give me one second. I will give you an answer to that. So Zefram Cochrane's birth year is 2030. World War III ends in 2053. Have him be a main character that pops up in the last two episodes.
Is
The
the
young.
name the okay, the name we get, but is the name enough that the general population, the people who aren't Trekkies, after just watching what effectively is going to be a Call of Duty campaign for 3 seasons, are they going to have enough? Is
It,
there going
like
to
it's
be
gonna
enough
ring a
of?
is gonna ring a bell enough to have the payoff of the reveal?
Exactly, yeah.
I think if it's more than if the name itself is mentioned several times throughout the series.
No, because I don't want to tip the hand that early. I would want to do it at the very end of the last episode or two, where this young pilot or whatever shows up and he's like, "Hey, one day I'm gonna touch the stars. That's it. That's all I need. I'm gonna trek to the stars."
God damn it.
It's gonna be that's kind of what I would want. I like the idea that everyone would be like, "Who the fuck is this guy?" And there would be seven nerds on the internet just pounding away at the keyboard. I said keyboard.
You did.
Just like absolutely in love with the fact that, did you know this was a Star Trek series? And the answer is no, we didn't know that. I would love that reveal that we've got a we can tell other stories. That's what Discovery did. Tyler, you don't know this, but they do a big time jump in Discovery. They go far into the future, farther than we've ever seen before. And the galaxy's fucked up.
Did
And
they
like,
meet Doctor Who?
no. But they get they've got big problems they've got to deal with. They have to rebuild the Federation. Do that storyline, but do it with tech from that era and not the Discovery tech.
And I hear what you're saying, and I think it's fantastic. I'm wondering if they tried to do that with Enterprise and they just missed the mark entirely.
I don't like thinking about Enterprise. It's
Right?
funny. I
Nobody
love
really
Scott
does.
Bakula. What'd you say, Sean?
Nobody really does like
Yeah.
thinking about, anyways.
I have no problem with any single individual factor of Enterprise. They just didn't gel for me. It just was a non-starter. Maybe
Yeah,
too many
what?
sexy massages in the shower.
Sonic showers.
Rub this gel over me for.
Which can someone explain to me the tech behind a sonic shower? Because as far as I know, they're just standing in front of like a subwoofer. And it's just like just thumping the dirt off their nuts, right?
Dirt. Yeah,
Anyway, did we go through all
I
the
think so.
theories? All right.
Who's
That's
next?
I
Tyler
guess
or?
that's Tyler. You're up.
Yep, 5 has been done. 18's been done. 20, not 20. Question is, so I believe it is Ryan. He's like, with his limited knowledge, he thought it was only fair to give us a chance to vent on a subject that he had not mentioned. So he says to please vent away. Oh, if there is a subject that I would want to vent on, I can't accurately say because I haven't seen the newer series, but I would want to learn. I want to learn more backstory on the characters that we have. For example, like when I loved watching Voyager. I want to learn more about their backstories.
You're never going to get that.
Exactly. I know I'm never
Only
going to get that.
characters are going to be Captain Pike, number one, and Spock. That's it. Those are the ones that get backstory.
I know, and that's a again. That's one thing I've missed about Star Trek in general is this. I want this character development throughout the series, yes, but I want to learn where these guys came from. Maybe that's what I want to make a series about, is about backstories of characters. There we go. I'm changing my answer there. Done.
What about an animated series where they can all reprise their roles as younger versions of themselves and give us like an
Yes.
origins?
Oh, I'd love that. Oh gosh, yeah.
I
Kind of
got
like
to
what
say,
they.
I miss, they also really get into Picard's backstory in season
Oh
four.
yeah, but yeah, I would love to see that if they did like a series, like an animated, a mini animated series on just some characters' backstories. Yeah, sure. That's one thing I wish that they had is more backstory stuff. But that's just my D&D side coming out.
I'm going to be honest. Look, there are exceptions to this. I love the baseball episode in DS9. I tolerate Vic Fontaine, weirdly added in the late season. I'm big on Moriarty, and Worf saying, "I am not a merry man," is fantastic. But get the fuck all out of the holo rooms, the holo suites, holo decks. Get out. Get out. We are in space. Tell space stories. Stop giving me Robin Hood. Stop, like, Captain Proton once, just once. I only need it one time. And it can be the one holo deck episode a season, and we can move the fuck on. It's too much. It stopped being Star Trek. It started to be these characters are prancing around in whatever costume that they're in. I'm not, the only time that I'm like, hey, that was a great, amazing use of it was in First Contact against the Borg, who can't stop bullets. So they went into the holodeck, picked up a Tommy gun, turned off the safety settings, and just mowed down like five Borg. Great. Other than that, it has been a crutch for writers who don't know what to do with these characters, especially the safety protocols are off. We can't get out. They don't know they're in a hologram. Fuck off.
Okay, I got two. Along those same lines, if you think about the progression of the tech of a holodeck, right, you would have to first invent the actual light and image portions before you would the actual physical portions. So it's not even that the safety protocols are disabled. Why are we building it so it's unsafe to begin with?
Because you can't fuck with hard light, Sean.
I was about to say, some people find pleasure in pain.
Yeah, you know what? There are entire programs in Quark's holo suites that they need those safety protocols turned off.
That's fair. That's fair. That's fair. And this is a little bit of a vent. It is a little bit of a rant. Star Trek is at its best when it is sci-fi and not fantasy.
Yep, agreed.
Um,
Agreed. That's what we have Star Wars for.
yes.
That was purely to put you on tilt, Sean. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that threw me on tilt.
That was good.
DS9 was hugely impactful. One of the reasons that DS9 was so hugely impactful was that they were telling a war story that they could have told in any other media, any other format, right? In a space setting. It felt more sci-fi than it did fantasy in that frame of mind. Locutus was always Locutus, the impact of Picard being assimilated was that you had Picard, who everybody thought was invincible, be assimilated, right? And it stopped being a story of a bunch of people flying around on a spaceship and grounded it and gave it purpose, gave it sense, gave it direction. I will argue that a lot of the time people say that it is grittiness that they are finding in those episodes. It's not necessarily grittiness, I feel, but it is a sense of direction and a sense of purpose.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah. I don't disagree with anything you just said. There are only eight questions left, so I'm going to roll a D8.
All right. Where'd I throw my dice?
I rolled a one. So the first one we haven't gotten to is number six. All right. God, we're just going to rant. Star Trek is really good, but a lot of these questions are just so like, tell me the thing you fucking hate about it. I've heard very mixed things on the newer Star Trek series. Picard, other than the third season, and Discovery, I've not heard many good things about, mostly from Red Letter Media. Do you feel the same, or are these people just not liking the direction? Okay, I've got a strong opinion, and there will be people that disagree with me about this, but here we go. First and foremost, Discovery came first, and it was very, very different than all the Trek that we had wanted before. We wanted something that felt a little nostalgic. The reason people forgave The Force Awakens is because it felt like Star Trek. If we started with The Last Jedi, they would have fucking hated that way more than they already do. because it was a departure from the expectation. Discovery did not deliver on the expectation, and they made Klingons weird. Hey, everybody, shut the fuck up. They made Klingons weird at the beginning of TNG. Where did those fucking head ridges come from? We didn't have that in the original series. Shut up. This has been an issue. Oh, they're too progressive because they have LGBT characters in it. Shut up. Like, it's been progressive. It has been doing this thing all along. One of the very first lesbian kisses on screen was in Deep Space Nine. And nobody was ranting and raging about that when that happened. You just have the internet to scream at. Shut up. What, Chad?
I remember very distinctly a lot of people having a lot of problems with that kiss.
Do you really?
I do, yeah. It was very heavy in the media for that one. It was on the news.
I don't remember that. Okay, so anyway, we look back on Deep Space Nine not as being too woke, but it absolutely fucking was. The entire Ferengi arc is, hey, let's let women wear clothes again, right? So, like, there's a lot going on in Star Trek. Like, if you don't think old Trek was woke, you weren't paying attention. You just saw them swagger in with Kirk's schlong wagon between his knees and go, oh, he walks like John Wayne. This is old conservative, blah, blah, blah. No, it's fucking woke. It always has been. That's what it does. It tells stories to challenge the status quo. That's what Star Trek does. Does that make it bad? No. Picard didn't give us what we wanted. We wanted the old crew to come back together. They just didn't deliver on what the fan expectation was. This is why people don't like it. When they talk about Discovery, they say later seasons of Discovery are good. I look at season 2 of Discovery, where the Strange New Worlds crew they showed up. That was great. I had no problems with that. I think Michael Burnham's arc was the most interesting and best handled in the first season. Do people cry a lot in Discovery? Yes. Are the stakes through the roof in every episode? Yes. People react strongly to strong situations. Shut the fuck up. Right? Like, this is where I'm getting to the point where I have stopped paying attention to the Star Trek fans online because they just need something to bitch about. Strange New Worlds is amazing. It really is. Lower Decks is great, and it's made for the fans. Prodigy is its own really cool, fun little side project for kids, but I enjoyed it. I don't have kids. I watched it on my own to be like, what's this? And I fucking loved it. It was really cool. I'm excited that they may get another season. So I am big on New Trek. I think it's phenomenal. I think that anybody that is sitting here going, well, they did this wrong, are reading angry Reddit posts and regurgitating the complaints on their YouTube channel. And you should never regurgitate anything that you read on Reddit. So I don't know. If you can sit down and accept that this story, here's the other thing I want to point out. And this is something that I have a lot of conversations with recently with people. Sean, you and I did a whole episode about, is this story meant for you? I was a teenager when Deep Space Nine came out. There were 1990s tropes on television that were not tropes at that point. That was cutting edge storytelling. It was meant for me. I am now 40. I am not the target demographic. I'm just not. So when they're going to try to bring in new people, they're going to bring in the younger generation. It's not going to be in the same storytelling language that you're used to because they're not pandering to you anymore. So sit back, take a breath, realize it's not all about you. And they're going to tell interesting stories with characters you've never seen before, acting in ways that you may not be accustomed to. And they're telling a story, but you know what? That's what fucking science fiction is. So there are episodes that are not good writing. There are actors that are not good actors. There's direction that I go, why did they do that? In one episode of Discovery, we figure out that the turbo lifts like exist in this huge, like extra dimensional space inside that. Like, it's a really weird directorial choice. And we see it like moving through this vast expanse of darkness and lights in the distance. I'm like, how big is this fucking ship? That was weird. I didn't like that, but it doesn't mean that the whole series is shit. So I didn't particularly like Picard season 2. I think it meandered. I thought Picard season 3 was literally just masturbatory for the fans so that we can end on a high note, right? And I was there for it. I loved it. But was it good Trek? Nah, not really. It was Trek though, right? And that's the complaint. It's not my Trek. Okay, well, you had your Trek. Sit down and shut up.
I will note that you did not talk about Picard season 1.
Picard season 1 was a failure to launch from a story writing perspective because they had so many ideas that were so big and so good that fell apart by the end of the season. That they either rushed through it or they dangled it. Picard season one should have taken its time and breathed and been 30 episodes across two seasons. I'd have been all over that. It was just rushed. That was all.
I felt it was very poorly written, and I agree.
It suffers from the last season of Game of Thrones syndrome, where suddenly they're just on the other side of the map doing this fucking thing that they barely explained why it's important and nobody's acting. And like, Picard was the only main character from TNG. I mean, we saw a couple of the others, but it wasn't what I signed up for when I sat down to watch another Picard story, right? But no, you're right. It probably the lowest production of all the new Trek that we've gotten.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I do have some problems, not problems. The overarching storylines for, ooh, a spider.
Never heard of that one.
Sorry. The overarching storylines for Discovery, they're pretty good. I feel in execution, each episode taken by themselves are very hit and miss. Strange New Worlds, however, is phenomenal, and it is exactly what I want in Star Trek in all ways.
Yeah, I just think that Discovery was trying to tell stories we weren't used to telling, and they were doing it in ways that we weren't used to, and it's meant for binging, right? Again, I'm not defending it. There are weak spots in it. There are
Oh,
some characters that I just do not like, and there are some characters that I've watched four seasons of that I don't know their fucking names yet, right? That's the thing about Discovery, Tyler. Why, if you ever sit down to watch it, the bridge crew doesn't matter, which is very strange. But I do get the impression that people are pissed off because it's LGBT characters.
For the record, I've got no problem that there are LGBT
Oh,
characters.
no, of course, no. I mean the people, the keyboard warriors that won't shut the fuck up about the low quality. They just start nitpicking, right? And I'm like, you're looking for things to be mad about. Stop hating your own thing.
Yeah, Discovery. I had Discovery had to. It was very difficult to keep my focus on Discovery, for sure. Picard more so, unfortunately. The last season of Picard was fun, especially the last couple of episodes when they had the gang back together. That was pretty cool.
When they went to the Museum of Old Ships, beautiful.
Yeah,
Love that.
I'm on board for that level of shit, right? That's cool. Strange New Worlds and Lower Decks are phenomenal Trek. Lower Decks because it does kind of hit me in this nostalgia berries, but Strange New Worlds is the right mix of classic Trek and future Trek.
I gotta say, look, most Star Trek has been known for having, rubber masks and shit, but since TNG, we have pretty good prosthetics and the makeup is pretty believable, but it just doesn't look real in Lower Decks.
Adam,
Stopped you both fucking cold.
like,
Tyler, what do you think? How much have you actually dealt with new Trek at all?
zero,
Zero? All right.
zero. That's why I'm like, I'm listening to you guys. I'm like, okay, what to keep
Don't.
out for? Because I want to watch the newer series,
Yeah.
especially like Strange New Worlds. And now that you're mentioning Prodigy, I'm like, okay, I'd love to watch that.
Look, I'll tell you, we'll start with Discovery and go until the time jump. Then move over to Strange New Worlds and decide whether or not you want to continue with Discovery. That's the right way to watch it.
Fair enough.
I think I've kind of figured out, hold on a second. I'm thinking this and I'm saying it for the first time live-ish.
That's how conversations work, Sean. We
Yeah.
don't all script it.
I feel as if Discovery just doesn't know what it is. Burnham is so drastically different from season to season to season.
You want to know what it is? This is the weak writing, is they give her a problem at the beginning of every season, and instead of her actually growing, they just solve the problem and start the next season with she has grown. She is here now. There's no organic curve to her arc. It is like a staircase,
Is
right?
that it? Yeah, I don't know. I feel as if Discovery is in this weird place in between, heyday of DS9 and J.J. Abrams, and it just quite hasn't figured out where it needs to be.
It wanted to be as dark and serialized as DS9, and I think that the writers wanted to hit that, but with all the shiny bits of JJ,
Yeah,
there's
I
a lot of
guess.
shiny
Oh,
bits.
there's a lot of shiny bits. Not nearly as much chrome, but there
I
is
was
a
about to
lot
say a
of
lot of chrome.
glass. No, there's a lot of glass. That's absolutely right.
Anyways.
But it did make everybody learn the phrase mycelium network. So,
Right?
yeah. Who's rolling next? I think that's Sean.
Is it? Well, hold on. I gotta find my D8. Where did I put my Whoop, it's over here. Hold on.
I'm holding on.
I'm coming back. I'm here now.
Oh, don't
Thank
scare me.
God, we almost couldn't hold on any longer.
Seven.
So, what's the seventh one? One, two, three, four, five.
Six. There's only six left.
It's only six. So we wrap around to the or we roll. Fuck, roll a D6, Sean.
I swear I haven't been drinking. Okay, here we go.
Why the
fuck not?
Six. Would I rather live in Star Trek or Star Wars? Okay, now this question here is specifically aimed towards me.
I don't know about that.
I am very much more a Star Wars junkie than I am a Star Trek junkie. And I will admit that wholeheartedly. I've got aura rest tattoos and three lightsabers within reach. And I've got R2's head over there and custom
droids
over
here. How dare you? You took
here.
His head?
Yeah, but it's a metal one.
Okay.
Yeah. And you know, like I enjoy my Star Wars. I love it. I would rather live in the Star Trek universe. I would rather live in the Star Trek universe. Specifically because it's the post scarcity universe. And I think, you know, I'm really fucking liberal and that's kind of the place I want to live.
It's a veritable utopia. And
yes.
If you don't like it, you could go to the fringes and live your life there. Right.
Exactly.
Room for everyone. Except the Maquis. Fuck them.
But, except the Maquis. Yeah.
And
in fairness, I bet if the Maquis decided to up and fuck off and live in their own little pocket of the universe, they'd be fine too.
Yeah.
Can't we all just get along?
No. Apparently not.
Tyler, Star Trek or Star Wars?
Oh, jeez. That's a hard one. I think you have to ask yourself, what kind of life do you want to live? If you want to live in a utopia, Star Trek on planet Earth. Yeah, absolutely. 100%. If you want to live a life of adventure, sure, you can go on a starship, or you can live in the Star Wars universe and just be on constant adventure, be part of the Rebels. That's a hard question. When I saw this, I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to answer this. I think if I was by myself, I would live in the Star Wars universe for the sense of adventure. I'd probably die within 2 days, but that's okay. But if I was with my family, I would be in the Star Trek universe.
It's very simple for me. Star Trek wins because it's a utopia. And it comes down to the idea that it's the same thing with the zombie apocalypse question. What's your plan? Fuck your plan. You're dead. You are not the main character in The Walking Dead. You are not necessarily going to be a Jedi. You're going to be the schlub on the planet that gets blown up by the eighth fucking Death Star.
Exactly. You are That's why you live 2 days and then done.
You are at best too short to be a stormtrooper. This is like, this is the world we live in. When we talk about Star Wars, we like the world building because it feels lived in. You know, you want to know something? People are scavenging for food and fucking moisture in goddamn Star Wars. Mm-hmm. In Star Trek, they go to the replicator. That's a laser swords, cool, yes. But the moment that I realize that I am not a destined Skywalker,
then you're gonna want me in the Star Trek universe.
Exactly. That's what it comes down to, right?
Yeah, like, absolutely.
Chances are good that, oh, what happens if 99% of the planet gets wiped out? And what are you gonna do for your survival? I'm in the 99%, right? We all are. That's how percentages work.
Too short to be a stormtrooper, not scruffy enough to be a nerf herder. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, but you did accidentally use parsecs as a unit of time.
It wasn't actually intended to be a unit of time.
I know that, but they didn't know that when they made that movie.
That is correct.
So, Tyler, roll a D5. However,
five.
Five, okay.
D10 divided by two.
Yeah. 17.
All right. What do you think about the morality of the Star Trek teleporters? They technically kill the person who uses it, right? Would you use one? Okay. I'm going to put the morality thing aside here. I have four kids. I would love to be able to get to places real quick.
I thought you were going to teleport them off planet.
There are days. I'll put them in a spacesuit. Don't worry. I'll teleport them back when I want them back.
The best Velcro wall ever.
I don't really care about the morality of teleporters. I want the existence of them to exist so that I can do things, actually. There you go. There's my morality stake. I want to be able to do things as a parent.
I had no problem with them until I read a Stephen King short story called The Jaunt. And the premise of the short story is it's in the future. There are teleporters, but it's like your consciousness gets transferred, but your body, and like you have to be asleep for all this shit to work, right? So there's a family, and the father starts telling the kids the history of the technology and who came up with it. And it's like this huge cosmic horror story of the people that were awake that went through it for the first time. It can transfer non-living matter, but if yeah, Sean.
So this was cocaine, Stephen King.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Continue.
But functional, and he remembers it, cocaine, high
Oh.
function, not low function. What's the book? I think it's Pet Sematary. He does not remember writing. So
Was it that or
I
Cujo?
think it's Pet Sematary because he's been on record saying that if he were to write it sober, he never would have done what he did in that book.
Huh,
It
okay.
is too upsetting to him, especially he was a young father at the time. So,
Yeah, okay.
however, the storyline of the jaunt is he tells these kids, about anybody that was awake, it is like comes out the other side completely mad. And so they're all given these pills and they're trying to like get everybody to calm down as they lay in their beds. And the parents are telling the story about how organic matter degrades unless this happens. And really the dawning of transporter technology. And the kick in the balls at the end of it is the kid didn't like the son didn't take his pill because he wanted to see what all the fuss was about. So they wake up on the other side to the kid completely white hair with this long like 30 light year view in his eyes, just scree like grabbing his face and screaming because he's gone insane from being awake through it. That made me stop and think about teleporters in general. Like, I don't want to be ripped apart atom by atom. That doesn't make me feel good.
It doesn't make you feel like Adam.
If I can be honest, there's also too much weird fuckery, like Tuvix. Can we talk about
Yeah.
Tuvix for a minute? Or Thomas
Yeah.
Riker? Or Mbenga's fucking daughter who is dying, so he keeps her in a
Buffer.
teleporter buffer
Yeah.
for eternity as he tries to fight. Like, there's too much dread. There's too much horror around them. Absolutely not. No, I'm good. Just give me a shuttle.
Fair enough.
The morality, this is actually really the first time it's really been brought up. I mean, there are always dangers, right? There's always the danger of, being teleported inside out or whatever. And they kind of hint at that a couple of times throughout the seasons, right?
Well, they actually did kind of look at that when they did Enterprise.
Yeah.
Like, I got a question. How many episodes do they try to teleport somebody out of the ship that's about to explode? And we can see the outline of the person. So, like, that person is materializing and then the ship explodes. We didn't get them. Okay, so that version died on the spaceship. What happens to the nearly built version? Does the teleporter just go, nah, fuck it, disintegrate, undo, control Z, fuck off? Like, we almost had a person's molecules back. And how are they transferring consciousness? I don't like any of this.
Yeah, I mean that th those are definitely the questions that are raised,
Yeah.
but
The idea
ultimately,
that it's in a buffer and whatnot, and
yeah, digitizing something that is effectively a consciousness, I don't know. There's a lot of hand waving that happens in Star Trek, and if teleporters are the thing that is sticking me in the morality parts, I'm not sure. I'm not sure I got the message.
All right, are we moving on then?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
D4.
Yep.
All right. Hell drop. There we go. Four. What does Star Trek do wrong? And where do you think it falls short? I, as much as I'm a liberal bleeding heart, and as much as I would love to believe that, by that point in society, we will li live in a utopia, I'm becoming pretty convinced that that's not going to happen. at the very least, not within our lifetimes, and probably not within our children's lifetimes. I think that a utopia would be a federation level utopia would be a very difficult thing to attain.
It's really predicated on the idea of post-scarcity. And
Yeah.
I'm still not clear on how they handle money because they clearly don't deal with money on Earth. And it's like there's no currency in the Federation. And yet they have gold pressed latinum when it comes to DS9 or, they do have trade goods.
Yeah.
So, and if you can replicate anything, what the fuck good is any of it? Like that's the
Except
thing
apparently
about
Latinum.
latinum. Latinum and dilithium cannot be replicated, but.
And I'm just trying to think because I know, so like Cisco's dad runs a restaurant down there and
Yeah.
they pay him in what though?
No, nothing. He does it for the passion.
Oh,
There's no
okay.
payment. Like, there's no payment on Earth. There's no currency.
He just likes to make gumbo.
Yes.
Done. Okay.
Yeah. I don't like, where does it fall short? Lots of places. Like no multi-series, multi-movie, multi-generational, multi-decade series is gonna hold up. There's a real problem with parents all the way across, with the exception of Cisco and O'Brien. They're all pretty shitty parents, like,
Yeah, you're not wrong.
and they're always killing off somebody's kid, whether it's Riker or Shatner. Like, somebody's kid's got to die to drive the plot forward, or they just walk off with a caretaker, never to be heard from again. As I don't even want to talk about Wesley. Fucking love Will Wheaton. Cannot stand Wesley.
I think
Fair
that's
enough.
pretty much the consensus from everybody on the cast as well, isn't it?
Including Will Wheaton.
Including Will Wheaton. Yeah. And even that was dodgy for a little bit.
No, where does it fall short? I don't know. It has evolved so drastically over so long that, like, the early stuff is will not hold up technically, right? The newer stuff feels too new for some people. I don't think it. All right, here's where it falls short for me. Here's going to be my only gripe. Starfleet's a military, right? It's
Yes.
a navy,
It's
isn't
an
it?
okay, yeah, okay.
It is the spacefaring arm of the United Federation of Planets.
So it's the Navy. They arm their ships. They have a hierarchy. They get promoted to other ships and other bases within, and they're all admirals and captains and commanders. They're a Navy, right? Why do we never address this? Unless it's wartime. Like, I know that we were on the flagship. Like, we're going out to meet, the new species, new civilizations, all that crap from the intro. But I don't know. It just feel like even Voyager, like, was not the flagship. Was not a warship going off to DS9. Like, we get Federation warships in later seasons of DS9.
Yeah.
It just feels weird that this is a naval show and nobody acknowledges it. Not the way that, like, they did in Battlestar Galactica,
That's true.
or the way
That's
that
true.
they dealt with the Alliance in Firefly, or even the Empire,
I
right, is
suppose,
clearly a military branch. And
yeah, I suppose one thing that they don't do very well in that case then is it the lack of private citizens? I mean, we had Harry Mudd, he's a traitor, but he's not human. Is he human?
yeah, he's human.
Right, but he's not on a human ship. Are all human ships
No, not all
Federation
human ships
ships?
are Federation, because there's all sorts of freighters that go between Earth and Mars and the rest of
Sure.
the solar system, right? So, like, there are other ships that pop up sometimes. That's a major factor when you get to the later seasons of Discovery, right? Is the human ships. But
Didn't the JJ verse try to do, there were a bunch of miners that were Starfleet as well?
yeah,
No, it
like,
wasn't JJ verse.
no, I don't think they were Starfleet. But, like, we have scientific outposts, but it's weird that we don't have military outposts. Like, it's never clearly addressed how militarized Starfleet is. But you have to go to the Academy. Like, it's clearly militarized. We're
Huh.
just it's just a weird place that I would like clarity on it. That's my gripe.
Even utopias need guns.
All right, Starship Troopers, calm down. Would
I
you like to know more?
think one thing that Star Trek might fall short on, and I didn't really realize this until I started to watch Orville, is real life issues. And more so to the point of they're real people. Now, they live in a utopian empire. Yes, I get that. But even in a utopian empire, people still fall short. No one is perfect. And we don't really see it that heavily in the Star Trek series. Whereas in something like Orville, you see that right off the bat, that nobody is perfect. Way, yeah, no, nowhere near.
It's
And
interesting because they take a broader scope in Star Trek. They're not going to talk about abortions when it comes to humanoids, but they'll have a concept of, does this life deserve to live when it's flesh-eating bacteria, or when it's a giant space jellyfish, or, right? Like, they will tackle the concept without tackling the concept. It's all metaphor. They don't talk about a person's personal failing unless that's the message that we're going to learn by the end of the episode, but they will tackle a government's failing,
But
right?
I'm thinking more even on a personal level, like what if someone struggles with alcohol? What if somebody like the struggles that the meant that people have that real life people have, the Star Trek doesn't deal much with that. And again, very vaguely, but I guess it's just our culture. And then when it was, I guess with like TNG and Voyager and all that, it doesn't touch base on that. Whereas maybe the newer series do. I don't know. But I know Orville, for example, you do see that. Now again, I have a feeling that if Star Trek did tackle that, it would no longer feel like Star Trek because it's almost kind of part of what makes it, in my opinion.
Although I've got to say, like, they never said it out loud, but we all know McCoy always had a flask, right?
Just don't see it.
I'm pretty sure that the not DeForest Kelly, the man is a wonderful was a wonderful person, but McCoy Bones was low key an alcoholic, right?
Probably.
Like I don't think we ever saw him. If we did see him drink, it was never to excess, except
No,
maybe
it
on
was
his
just like
podcast.
I needed something to calm my nerves.
Right, but like he just gave off the impression of a grizzled old war vet that, hit the bourbon after shift was over.
Oh yeah.
Romulan ale.
Sorry, of course.
All right, who's next?
That was
I think it's
me.
me.
Yeah,
Or
I'm
you
sorry.
next?
No, I just did that.
Okay. All right. Let's see what we got here. I got a one.
What's your favorite
Ooh.
episode?
Adam, you already answered this one with your favorite episodes. I would say, what was my favorite episode? Oh, I thoroughly enjoyed the season finale of Voyager.
The series finale.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that was how they ended it and how they did it. It felt really good. Like, well, by the end of it, it's like I'm happy with that. That now I'm good. It wasn't just a great episode. It was a great finish to a series. It just after you're done, it's like you could take a breath of fresh air and be like, I don't need to ask questions. I could, but I don't need to. And that to me is a sign of a good season ender, a series ender. And so I think that's one of my favorite episodes of Star Trek in general.
Yeah, I agree with you. That one was really solid. It did what the series was trying to do, right? The
Yeah.
entire series, they were trying to get home. If there was any question that needed to be asked, it was always asked with the razor of, does it help us get home?
And it did.
Yeah.
And it did it in a really crazy fucking awesome way.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I gotta, yeah, Sean, what's your favorite?
My favorite, I'm, you know what? I started saying because I was trying to think of it and I can't think of it. So you go ahead.
There's one episode in Deep Space Nine that I think needs to be acknowledged as one of the absolute best. I don't know if you've hit it yet, Tyler. I don't know what season it's in, but it's the one where I'll tell you this: Sisko doesn't have hair anymore, so it's one of the later seasons. It's the one where he has a vision where he becomes Benny Russell back in like the 1920s, where he is a writer, and it deals real hard. Maybe it wasn't the 20s, maybe it was the 50s, but it deals real hard with race relations, and he is a black science fiction writer. And when the readers find out that he's a black man, he gets fired. And it is just this huge. Avery Brooks really put his foot down about portraying his character in an appropriate way, and he directed a number of episodes. He wrote a bunch of episodes, but this was a unflinching view of Earth's real historical racism. I was not expecting to get that shit out of a Star Trek episode, and when I saw it for the first time, it was like watching a drama. And like the B plot is everybody's on the station trying to wake him up, but he's in a coma, but he thinks he's created Deep Space Nine and he's writing stories about them. And the captain is black, and all of the people in the past in this flashback are all played by the actors. They're just out of makeup, right? So the actor who plays Quark and Odo and the others are just they're interacting, but as people of the era.
Yeah.
And it's powerful. It's a really powerful episode. And that's Star Trek at its best, is when it can tell these powerful stories that are not necessarily them coming up with some engineering techno babble about how they're going to be able to rescue the crew from this planet with the crazy fucking space clouds, right? Like, which is a lot of episodes, and I don't mind those episodes, but Trek is at its best when it's telling a bigger, deeper story about people and metaphor.
Fair enough.
And they often use metaphor to do it. That one was a fairly blatant punch in the gut, and so I really like that.
Nice.
I think under the episode that may be my favorite, the one that I go to when I think of top 10 episodes, and it's in DS9, it's Hard Time,
Oh
and
fuck.
it's the
I've
one.
been not talking about it because I don't know if Tyler's seen it yet, but it is. Oh fuck.
Yeah.
It's okay, I'll eventually get to it if I haven't got to it yet.
It's in season four. How far into DS9 are you?
Season five.
You're in season five, so you've already seen it. Okay, good. Yeah, so it's episode 4, or sorry, episode 19 in season four. and it's the one where he gets convicted of crimes and DS9 can't do anything of it.
Oh,
So
Brian does. Yeah.
and so
Yeah, that's right. Ah.
the alien race injects 20 years of brutal prison memories into him, and then they don't fix him. The end.
Yeah, and the whole episode is either flashbacks or it's him dealing with PTSD.
And they don't fix him.
Nope.
The end. And then you're like,
What happened? What's going on?
that happened. Anyways,
This is why O'Brien is one of my favorites, because they fuck him at every opportunity.
He just deals with it.
O'Brien must suffer.
Yeah.
Anyways, and yeah, that one hits hard for me.
Season 4, season 5, season 6, peak DS9. So good. All
All
right.
right.
Yeah. Now that it got heavy, let's wrap this up. I'm gonna roll odds or evens for the last two.
All right.
I went odds. So did Worf ever get to be a badass? Why do you think he never got fired?
He did get fired, didn't he? I
No, I
seem to
know.
remember him being stripped of rank a couple of times.
I think he got demoted a couple of times, or at least put on probation a couple of times. He straight up abandoned his post more than once. But like, clearly not for Alexander. So one of my favorite ongoing, like, it's not even a joke, it's just a trope. Worf is a bad dad. Always funny. So the idea here is that Worf is supposed to be the toughest one on the ship. He's supposed to be a big badass that's great at hand-to-hand combat. They even like bumped him up from security to like chief tactician, right? Like, he joins the DS9 crew to help them defend the station, and yet he gets beat up, knocked out on almost every episode that he's in Star Trek: The Next Generation. Did he ever get to be a badass? Yes. Watch Deep Space Nine, particularly the Klingon shit, or when he ends up in the concentration camp and he is just forced to fight in a like forced boxing ring over and over and over. Worf is a fucking badass. He also gets a little bit of redemption in the third season of Picard when he shows up. He's pretty badass in that. He took a bat'leth to the Borg for a movie and won. Worf is a badass. The reason he never got fired is because he only ever lost because of shitty plot and bad writing. It's known. It is an actual trope, and I think it's named after Worf too, but I don't remember if it's like the Worf.
Worf's ideas always get shot down.
No, I was gonna say, like, if you need to make a villain scary, you have him knock out the toughest one of the main characters.
You
knock out Worf.
You knock out Worf. That's what it's for, which is bullshit. The toughest is Data.
Easy.
So, but he's the most warrior and whatnot. Look, I love Worf. I will defend Worf all fucking day, just not his parenting skills.
I don't have anything else I can follow up with that question. Yeah, absolutely. Worf was absolutely a badass. He wasn't the biggest Klingon. He wasn't always the biggest badass. They did give him the ability to be the badass. And sometimes he was the biggest badass of them all because he chose not to be a badass.
That's what I was thinking too. That hit the fact that his story is that he got rejected out of the Klingon society because of being with Enterprise. And he just stuck it to the Klingon saying, "No, I'm gonna stay with them. That is badass." And he
He
still shows that he's tough to take any of them on.
doubled down and on Klingon culture in a big way, to the point where he's almost like the perfect Klingon, because he truly believes in honor of the. We've seen other Klingons backstab each other and come up with secret plots, and that's not very Klingon. He's always been Klingon, always has been. And I mean, he got rewarded by joining the House of Bartok in later seasons. So, spoiler alert, Tyler, but if that hasn't happened already,
It
but
has.
he's a. And can I just say, Martok's one of the best fucking characters too? Like, why have we not
Oh
talked
God,
about
yes.
Martok? His growl is perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of Klingons, Gowron's eyes, they haunt me in my sleep.
You look at a picture of his eyes and you think that's what Starscream would look like if he was a Klingon.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh.
All right. Do we move on to best Star Trek movies?
Yeah.
First Contact's the best one.
I don't think that's a hot take. People will yell at you about Wrath of Khan.
Let him. First Contact's better. I don't know.
It's more entertaining.
It's definitely more
Yeah, it is.
entertaining.
Yeah.
And I suppose it's also probably a function of me having grown up with TNG as well. So they were a little bit more contemporary for me at the time.
And every one of them, every one of the characters, the main characters, is pushed to the raggedy edge in that one. I mean,
They
Picard
really
even broke
are.
his little ships.
I would have to agree with you on that one. I think that the First Contact movie just had so much in there that they could look into, with the Borg, but also time travel. You have the very first ship that you see that is able to have a hyperdrive. Like, it's just, it has a whole bunch in there, and they do such a good job of unpacking it. It's not as if there's so much involved in one area. So I did enjoy it. Now, if I had to choose another one, there's so much of the TNG stuff is great. I actually enjoyed their first Star Trek. The 2009, the reboot, when they did
I was about to say that's gonna be top three.
it was just great. I like how they did a reboot. It was fun, and it was a different time. It was a different dimension, alternate reality, and it was fun. I think they did such a good job, especially when they hadn't made a Trek film in quite some time. This was like a refresh.
I liked that they gave us alternate realities before I started to get bored with it, which I am now. I like that they gave us an actual reality. Like Spock came over, old Spock, Leonard Nimoy, the Spock. This is canon. It's just not in the universe you're used to.
Exactly, that they tied that in so well.
So it was the most creative use of storyline that I've ever seen. Say, hey, this is for all the old guys and the new guys.
Yeah.
Right? It's for everyone. It still counts, but it's a great jumping on point. We would not have any new Star Trek if it wasn't for that movie being successful, which is why I want to point that out. Also, the casting was fucking phenomenal in it.
That
God.
was absolutely.
And I would also say, yeah, First Contact, I have no problem with that. That is a great answer. Wrath of Khan is a great answer. The whole Wrath of Khan trilogy, 2, 3, and 4, great answer. And the 2009 is phenomenal. Beyond is great. But we have not spoken of nuclear vessels, and this is a problem.
Listen, the old Trek movies and old Trek, those old scientists have their place. And sure, it's classic Trek, but I still find it so painful to watch.
I don't know,
It's
man. The
culture.
Voyage Home is my comfort zone. I could plug that on at any time and just vibe through that whole fucking movie. There's no weird, awkward fucking fan dance. There's no like they show up, they dick about in San Francisco, and then Scotty tries to talk into a mouse. Like it's just so much mush.
Computer.
The computer, it's so good. Is it the best Trek? No. Is it a warm blanket? Absolutely. So the only Trek to like just not really give a shit about space.
Okay, let's flip this question on its head. Worst Star Trek movie.
I don't know. We all got really quiet. I'm sure we're gonna like truncate the silence out of this. We all sat here in silence for like 10 full seconds.
Yeah.
How many nerds are we going to make angry with this one? It's
Either
just.
Star Trek 5 or Star Trek 10. Either the Final Frontier where they meet God, why does God need a spaceship? Or Picard's clone, played by the unknown and thoroughly underrated Tom Hardy.
At that point of his time,
Yeah.
that point of his career. Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
but every decision that was made in that, like Data becoming B4, fuck off. I don't need that. That you worked so hard for that joke and we didn't need to kill his character off. Brent Spiner, clearly not done with Data.
No.
Why the fuck did we do this? Because they wanted an emotional gut punch? Nah, fuck. Nemesis annoys me, but I think that Shatner getting to direct and have creative control over the Final Frontier
Hold
is the
up,
low
though.
point series.
Nemesis gave us the red goop,
Yeah.
which made it possible for the first JJ verse movie to kick off,
I think so,
right?
yes. I
Yeah,
look,
it was that. Yeah.
I have tried to block Nemesis out of my fucking head. Like, I
Yeah.
really didn't like it at all. I like Insurrection was just a 2-hour-long episode. That was fine. Generations, highs and lows. There were some really good things. Kirk dying because bridge was a bad thing. But there's like I can find redeemable qualities. I thought Final Frontier was really good. I'm all disappointed I haven't watched it enough. I can find something redeemable. I don't think I've said this maybe I did say it on the episode that we talked about tropes, Sean, where the motion picture is one of an unofficial trilogy of communication science fiction movies in my head. You watch the motion picture, then you watch Contact, then you watch Arrival, and you
Yeah,
have
okay.
a
Yeah.
wonderful thematic evening, right? So
Yeah, I think you mentioned that.
I don't know, like I've got good things to say. I Into Darkness wasn't great, but it was fun. Shit blew up, right?
Yeah, and it had, again, a great cast.
Yeah, Search for Spock was fun. Like Genesis Device was iconic, right? I don't know. What do you guys think? I mean, I ran. I think I fucking listed them all. I've rambled.
I gotta agree. As much as I enjoyed how thematically dark and visually dark Star Trek Nemesis was,
Yeah.
and I'm always on board for Tom Hardy. I think that's probably the low point, a low point. Yeah, God on a spaceship was a low point.
And like Spock's long lost, can you please stop having long lost siblings? Are
Please.
we done now? Fuck.
Please. Anyways, I agree. What about you,
Tyler,
Tyler?
I haven't watched the first ones enough to really get a good idea on those. I did like the TNG ones. And I like the later ones. I think based on what I remember of the originals, I think The Final Frontier, just because I never could get into it, and it just never was, I think it very easily a cultural thing as well. Like it's not part of the culture I grew up in. So I never could get really attached to it. Like the Khan series from 2, 3, and 4, great. I loved watching them. But Final Frontier, I have to agree with you on this one, Adam. It just didn't click.
The problem was that they let Leonard Nimoy directed a Star Trek movie, and then fucking Kirk, William Shatner was like, "Me too," and he just picked a script that resonated for him, and then they said, "Hey, you know what? We've had enough success with the last three. We'll let you use your budget." But the budget wasn't high enough, and it fell apart. That would have been a absolutely fine episode of the original series,
Yeah.
but things were campier then. Anyway, I think that wraps us up for our conversation on Star Trek. Is there anything else? Any other final thought you'd like to get into? Like, there's a bunch of shit that didn't cover. There's so much.
Oh yeah, I
And I
think
feel like we really did not give Enterprise or the animated series any fucking mention, but
I feel bad that Enterprise is as universally panned as it is.
it was just so pedestrian. My problem was it wasn't bad, but it wasn't good. It was just nothing.
Yeah, I agree. I think if I have anything to take away, it's that I should probably go try and watch Enterprise, and I should watch Prodigy.
Yeah, I would like to just watch the new series in general, the newer, even Picard. I was looking forward to watching Picard when it first came out, and I just couldn't.
Do it.
Look, if you know TNG, if it scratches your itch, there's no harm in going through it. The seasons get progressively better, although in my opinion, season two has a bit of a lull near the end. We get into a lot of Picard's childhood that I didn't need. That was a weird choice to make for my Star Trek series. But all right. But again, not bad storytelling. It's not what I signed up for. And I think that's a lot of the problems with Star Trek, as far as the fans are concerned. We have an idea in our head of what it is, and it's so personal to us,
Yeah.
right? Because when did you start watching? What's your favorite series? What hit you hard? I watched Voyager live when it was coming out, but like it didn't hit me like DS9 did. So I know a lot of people would say Voyager is their favorite Trek. Like Terry says Voyager, and it's because it's what you grow up with, right?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
So anyway, that's it for this episode of the It's a Mimic podcast. Thank you so much for listening. You can check out the show notes for all of our links for things. I feel like we should end this episode with Live Long and Prosper, but we're not going to do that. We're going to say glory to you and your house. It misses something without the fucking eyes, but I did my best.
You know what? You go right ahead, bud. You fill your boots and you say that. You just go right.
We'll just imagine the eyes. This is
I
an audio
just
medium after all.
I
You
fucking
just
love Gowron. Just my favorite fucking clown.
Goodbye.
Anyways, goodbye.
Thank you.